Ladies and gentlemen, from the golden microphone of the EIB, it's El Rushbo, reminding you that unless I'm trapped in a drug-addled hillbilly heroin haze, I never listen to the promise of tomorrow. And now, liberal alert, here comes the colonel.
You know, it's really funny, isn't it? It's so funny how other talk show hosts will sneak into a serious science program to disrupt the program. All right, Rush, go get yourself your own science program. Okay, here we are. Welcome back. The second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow on the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. In just a minute, we're going to get back to our riveting interview with Donald Watkins, the brilliant entrepreneur and energy guru from Birmingham, Alabama. I can't hardly wait to hear the rest of what he has to tell us. And Watkins was the guy who guided the Alabama State University partnership with TPSG, Total Protection Services Global, to create the Nuclear Protection Academy this past September. And the new ASU Academy will greatly enhance the protection of nuclear energy power plants across the United States and in other energy-producing countries. The incidentally, the CEO of Total Protection Services is Francina Hallrus. She's been on this program before. She's coming back again because she's doing some exciting things in Jordan that we can't quite tell you about yet, but we will. So I hope you stay tuned. Francina is also going to be speaking at the 6th Annual Green Technology Conference going on in Corpus Christi, April 3 through 4. I hope you will have a chance to get down there to see her. Her speech is going to be absolutely riveting, too. She's talking about a green vulnerability and avoiding disaster. And a lot of people don't realize the green vulnerability in our power grids, but it's there. And she's going to explain all about that. If you want to know more about that conference, you can go to IEEE Green Tech. .org. There's no dots or dashes in there. That's IEEEGREENTECH.org. And that will tell you more about that particular program. And of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. So before we get back to our interview with Donald Watkins, let's step over here to our fountain of useless information that hangs around the set. Rubbish around the coin jar here. Here we go. And for today's query, what do you say?
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help
you? Of course, once again, we have thrown in the coins and awakened the spirit of the fountain. All right, old spirit of the fountain, here's one for you. Put on your meditation cap and think back a long time to early TV, huh? What was the first TV Western to run 90 minutes? 90 minutes? Well, that was unheard of back in the 1950s. What was the first one? The first TV Western to run 90 minutes?
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell the other.
Ah, the spirit of the fountain really does know all, hear all, see all, and tell all. The first TV Western to run 90 minutes back in the 1950s. I remember it. Yeah, you're way my age, aren't I? The Virginian. All right. Back to today's guest. And we're back with brilliant energy entrepreneur Donald Watkins speaking to us from Birmingham, Alabama. When we broke at the half hour, he was telling us about how he has got his deals with the country of Namibia. I had been pronouncing it Nambia, which is wrong. It's Namibia.
So what we have done is partnered with the national government in two zones, uranium production and oil production. And it was a way of diversifying, you know, the business holdings, and we're actively working on both. Right now, we are finishing the exploration part of both. We will develop them serially, starting with the oil production and then moving to the uranium production. And the uranium is fuel grade, meaning it will be used for electrical power generation. So when I met Total Protection Services, they were already guarding nuclear electrical power generation facilities. And it was a natural mix for us, a natural synergy. And so, you know, they'll do the guarding and we'll be supplying the uranium.
Well, that's fascinating. Now, and I should say that Namibia is N-A-M-I-B-I-A, so I might have been kind of mispronouncing it there for a little bit.
It's Namibia. A lot of people mispronounce it, and you know, I've just been there so much. It's Namibia.
Yeah, okay, good. All right, I got that. I gotta ask you now, the...
I have 2 months to say it right, so don't feel bad about it.
that's funny. Yeah, I imagine so.
Writing checks to them for license fees, you learn how to pronounce it real fast.
I guess so. That's right. And uranium, I know that, you know, a lot of people are very excited about that, but aren't we really using the old weapons-grade uranium that we get from decommissioning these atomic bombs in the Soviet Union and the United States? Isn't that what we're burning right now?
Dispose of that, and we mine fuel-grade uranium for these power facilities, and there's a whole commission, international commission, that monitors all of that, mm-hmm. both the mining of that as well as the purchasing and sale and purchase of those commodities. But, for example, in Namibia, our competitor for this license were the Iranians. Mm-hmm. The Iranians have been over in Africa, work in Africa for decades, and so there was and because the Iranians were open in there, Namibia trying to do it, the U.S. Embassy encouraged the national government of Namibia to impose a moratorium on issuing any new licenses for uranium. The moratorium was only lifted for us so that we could be awarded ours. So we competed against the Iranians and out-competed them, and they lifted the moratorium long enough to award us the license.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to ask you, do you see any opportunities right now in our talks that we're having with Iran in reducing their nuclear capability? Do you see anything there for your company?
I don't think so. We stay in this fuel space. You know, they're trying to do the whole weapons grade program, and they're under a lot of international pressure not to do that, and I understand that. But what we want to try to do is, you know, compete for our company. And we don't mind going heads up, you know, against the Iranian interest if we have to. But at the same time, we have to be careful in the international space, Colonel, so that we're not viewed as a tool of the United States government or a tool of U.S. policy. But if we can go and under the capitalist banner, compete, you know, on our own term with our own credibility, and if we can deprive somebody of an opportunity who is otherwise viewed by the United States as an adversary to its interest in mm-hmm. Africa and elsewhere,
sure.
Then I don't mind, you know, having that position. So, you know, and it just so happened to work out in Namibia. You know, we reported our conduct to the U.S. Embassy there, and they were happy and thrilled that we were the ones who were selected. So it just works out. It just works out.
Well, Donald, I can understand why you'd be happy with that position. That's a great position to have, and certainly a laudable one, and the rest of us could all say, gee, what a great service you're providing for humanity, for the United States, and what brilliant business practice. Now, I want to ask you about something else, too. In 2005, you were the only litigator that successfully defended the New York Stock Exchange Company, their CEO, against Sarbanes-Oxley charges. This guy Richard Scrushy, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, tell me about that.
Yeah, he was the first CEO charged with Sarbanes-Oxley violations. The United States government, and he was CEO of HealthSouth. It's a, you know, international rehab hospital. Mm-hmm. They're all over America. And so he was CEO. He was the actual founder of that company. He developed it to a 2,000 hospital company, and they were publicly traded. So they were accused of cooking the books, and he was charged with 85 felony counts of cooking the books, Sarbanes-Oxley, you know, certifying
sure.
false financial records, etc.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was actually retired from practicing law, and he was a friend of Richard Arrington, the first black mayor of Birmingham, and Arrington
oh.
asked me would I represent him.
That's how you found it.
As a personal favor to him, Arrington.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I did that. It took 2 years of my life. I didn't know it was going to take that much. And at the end of the trial, and it went to trial, it was not one of these plea deals or anything like that, we took on the government, and we won it all, and he walked out a free man with me. So that was my last case, and it hadn't been done before that. It has not been done since that. 85 felonies gone down to zero, and you walk out a free man.
I remember the Richard Scrushy thing, and in passing, I didn't study it closely, but I had no idea you were the guy that defended him. And the National Law Journal did an article on you, I think, on that, titled, what, Coming Back to Try One More?
Yeah, they did. And, you know, I enjoyed it, only for the purpose of this. Usually black attorneys are not recognized as having the skill level to do Wall Street type cases, you know, the big, you know, Fortune 500 represent some CEO at that level. And so I've always known that we had the skill set to do real well, but we never get the shot. And so I thought it was the perfect showcase. It was the perfect stage, because when they did announce the verdict, they broke in. It was live stuff on network TV, mm-hmm. national network TV, to yeah. announce the verdict. And it would be America's first time seeing a black guy set a record. You know, they love to watch us in sports, but to set one in, you know, in a judicial setting mm-hmm. where the United States brought all of its might, all of its resources, and took 85 shots to take somebody down, and they lost on every single count. 85. They lost. They went 85 counts and got nothing. So, and I thought it was something that black attorneys could be proud of, and I hope more black attorneys get a shot to work on cases like that.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, now you have to tell me, whatever possessed you to try to buy the Minnesota Twins and the Anaheim Angels?
When we were kids, like all kids, you know, I'm 6'4", like all kids, you know, we wanted to do the athletic program, and our parents supported that, but they also tweaked it a bit. And they told us we need to know the business side of this stuff. It's fun running, dribbling, and all that stuff. And it would be nice, because they weren't paying athletes that much at that time. It'd be mm-hmm. nice if one day you studied the business thing enough to maybe you want to go on the ownership side rather than the player side.
Yeah.
And so I never forgot that, and I always tried to position myself to you know, build up an asset portfolio that would support that kind of pursuit. And so when I thought I was ready enough and could withstand the Wall Street scrutiny, you know, that the baseball people put you on mm-hmm. under and the football people put you under, then I went out and I applied for one. I didn't fully understand the system at the time. It's not enough to have the resources. There's a line that's a mile long, and you can't cut the line, and it has nothing to do with black or white or anything, because you don't have a constitutional right to have a baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
And so I entered the process, and I got passed around to where they thought opportunities were. And out of the three, I think I looked at, only one of them actually sold, and that was the Anaheim Angels. And I competed hard. Another guy won. And I'm proud of him, but it's an educational experience, and you get better at it the more you do it.
I guess. Well, anyway, what a brilliant, brilliant career you have had. It seems that you have done about anything that a person can in their life. And I know that you're 6'4", because I saw a picture of you standing next to Francina Hulrus of Total Protection Services right after the announcement was made of Alabama State University going into partnership to create that Nuclear Protection Academy. And I could see how you kind of towered over her. Of course, she's a little girl anyway, so.
Yeah. But let me say this, Colonel. Let me say this. A lot of people ask me this, but I'm going to tell you this. If you think about this, all of us, there are a lot of people who shape our lives and who shape our dreams and ambitions. So I grew up in Montgomery, Alabama during the worst of times. I mean, when you couldn't drink out of the wrong water fountain, if you did, you could expose the whole family to trouble that was unimaginable. You couldn't sit at the lunch counter and order a hamburger and french fries and a Coke. You couldn't do a lot of things. Couldn't use a certain toilet. And so I've come from that, but to get me from that place in time where it was real, this is nothing you read about in a book, this is your daily life, and my mom, we're six kids, my mom, before we went downtown on a hot, muggy day on a Saturday to go downtown and look for clothes and all that stuff, she made sure each one of us had a peppermint, and it wasn't to freshen your breath, it was just in case we got downtown and it's 95 degrees outside and you want a drink of water and the fountain from which you drink is not working, you don't feel tempted enough to go to the white-only fountain and get the whole family in trouble. You put this peppermint in your mouth, it will keep you moist until we can find a fountain that works that you can drink from lawfully. And so when you come from that environment and the hundreds of people in your community and the hundreds of people in your church and your school teachers and all of those people invest what they have, because they see something in you and they hope that if they give all that they have and put it in you and guide you and keep you out of trouble and clean you up and move you along, and you keep hitting benchmark after benchmark, you're no longer representing yourself. You are representing them. A lot of them are dead and gone. Their names you don't remember or know, but you can remember their faces and you can remember their contribution, no matter how large or how small, to your progress. And so when you say, Donald, that you've achieved a whole lot, really, I'm just a face and I'm just a name, but what I really represent is that aggregate contribution of all of those thousands of people who really took an interest in me from when the time I was a little boy to make sure I stayed on the right track. So I just want to make sure that when you compliment me, you're not just complimenting me, you're complimenting the total community effort that invested in me to make sure that I could hit the benchmarks that they believe I could achieve. Even though they knew they wouldn't get there themselves, they thought that they had a kid who could do this stuff, and they gave everything they had, everything. And for that, I am deeply appreciative.
That is such a generous attitude for a man of incredible success that you have had. And I have to tell you that I personally admire that deeply. And you have, though, been a man of vision. So put the meditation cap on for just a minute. Look down the road, maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 years, something like that. Give us a look into the future. What do you see the future?
Globalization is here. And it is the greatest asset and ally for people of color in the United States. Because the world is more colored than it is anything else. There are 208 recognized countries on the globe. And once you get outside the United States, the vast majority of them are of color. And people of color, they don't have a problem in dealing with you. If you have an idea or concept or goods or services that make sense, they don't have these artificial barriers. And so for the first time, we are able to connect on a global basis, and thanks to the internet, we don't have to physically go to these places to communicate. We can communicate through email, we can do texts, you can Skype all day long. It's like being there. And so there are no true limitations now. It's not enough for us to sit back and say, you know, the white man's holding us back and all of that. There's no limitation to being global. If you got a small idea and it's a good idea, you can take it globally, and you can seek independence through economic empowerment. Doesn't have to be you ain't got to build a skyscraper to do well out here. You can have one small idea, take it globally, you will do well, and when you do well, you'll get the independence to do more things. And so I think we will see more of that in the future. And we will see the world become our friend. So if we're looking for liberation, it will not come from government officials. It will come from our own brain power, our own determination, our ability to network with people who have had similar experiences to us. If you think about Africa, if you think about South America, a lot of those places were colonized. A lot of those people were enslaved. A lot of them just got their independence back in the 1960s, just like we did. And except for Africa, they now have their own nations, they have their own governments, they have their own economies, and they are used to dealing with people of color and people from around the world for thousands of years. They've been merchants of trade, bringing goods, bringing services, and all they want to know is, what is this? Is it a good deal for me? What is the price? So I think looking forward for the next 5, 10 years and beyond, we in America, especially people of color, need to tap into that globalization. It is your biggest ally. And in terms of the way we define ourselves, I think one of the best tools that is out here for us now is social media like Facebook. You know, for the first time, and I know a lot of people use it just to tweet and post things of a social nature, but for the first time, you have the ability to write articles, to define yourself, to define content, unedited. You don't have to convince some, you know, editor down in the newsroom to please be objective and tell our story right. You can post your own thing. You can determine the circulation. You can determine how widespread, what geographic areas you want to see. And so we get a chance to paint our own self-portrait, and the beautiful thing is it doesn't cost a dime. All you got to do is set up an account and then start your publications. It doesn't cost a damn. So between globalization and the ability for the first time ever in America for us to define ourselves have widespread distribution and circulation of our definition, and to do it all for free, you couldn't get it any better than this.
Well, Donald, we're going to have to wind this down, but before we go, I know you admit that you've been mentored by some brilliant people in your life and very successful people, and you've also mentored other people. Give us, just before going, give us a brief a word of wisdom, some words to live by. What can you give us?
I think the best thing is to look for bright, talented, gifted people and to bring them into your life. It doesn't matter if they're older than you or younger than you. If they're younger than you, invest in them. If they're older than you, let them mentor you, because people will share mentoring experiences. And that's been one of the keys to my success. And talent knows no color, anything, no socioeconomic circumstance. One of the most brilliant guys I met was a custodian at the law school. He could have been a law school professor, but for a circumstance of birth and time, he was the custodian, and I was the law student. So be open to talent and take it and accept mentorship. The only dumb question is the one you don't ask. So don't be afraid to venture out there, and don't be afraid to believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, how can you expect other people to believe in you?
Donald V. Watkins, the brilliant and gifted attorney, historic attorney from practicing in Birmingham, Alabama, very active in the nuclear industry and in trash to energy. You've been just absolutely a delightful guest. I can't tell you how terribly much we appreciate having you with us, and I hope you'll come back and join us again sometime.
Thank you, Colonel. Anytime.
And there you have it, brilliant energy entrepreneur Donald Watkins from Birmingham, Alabama, and how he cleverly kept Iran from a uranium supply in Africa. All right, before we get to the Voice of Reason, we want to remind you that this award-winning program has been non-commercial since 2010 and wholly supported by independent interests in the emerging science community and contributions from listeners like you. It is your support that keeps public programs like this one on the air. Donations are gratefully accepted at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On behalf of the staff and management here at the Science News Radio Network, our deepest gratitude to those of you who've contributed. Thank you.
And now we make time for the Voice of Reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Good news that's coming out of my career, and I've been doing this a long time, I've always been in the water end of environmental stuff, is that the consumer and municipalities, sub-state water regulatory agencies, states, and even the federal government, I get a little nervous when the federal government does it, but I think that people are becoming more and more educated on the value of water. And it had been taken for granted for a long time, surface water, but especially groundwater. People understand that what we have is all we have, and in a lot of cases with groundwater, once you contaminate it, it's contaminated for good. But what I'm seeing through programs like water reuse, aquifer storage and recovery, use of gray water, things like that state agencies and municipalities are aggressively getting into water reuse and water management. They're managing water. And that doesn't mean just getting it from the lake to the treatment plant to the pipe to the house and then back to the treatment plant. They're getting very, very savvy about managing water quantity and quality, and it's very heartening. I feel like progress has been made in the last 40 years. Mike Pate, Executive Director, Groundwater Protection Council.
So you decide, has this really been the Voice of Reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.